This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Internet world, West Alabama. How are we doing today on this Thursday? It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are hanging out watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. You're checking us out on the Bama Central Facebook page. You're on my own social media machines at JoeGaither6, or you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. We're going to have a fun show for you guys today, live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. You can check us out here right off of McFarland Boulevard. Call 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Home, life, auto insurance. Derek Daniel and his team would love to talk to you, get you a quick quote, and get you proper coverage, proper local coverage. That's what you need. So we appreciate Derek Daniel for sponsoring the program. We're going to get into it with our friend Mason Woods today. And, of course, about 8:30 or so, about 35 minutes into the program, we will hear from Katie Windham, lead writer for Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. We always appreciate Katie joining us on Thursdays. And really, it's a huge weekend for Miss Windham as Alabama softball is hosting its regional for the 20th consecutive time. So looking forward to hearing from Katie at about 8:30. Looking forward to hearing from you on the comment section at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_, at Bama Central, or you can leave us a voicemail at 205-462-7340, extension 800. With that, Mason Woods, good morning. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing good today. I'm good. I had a busy day yesterday. A lot of news in the recruiting world going on for Alabama. Started the day off there with a set an offer out for 2027, the 5-star wide receiver Monchon Sales. I believe he's the number 2 wide receiver in the class right now. If I had to guess, could potentially maybe be a candidate to reclassify. Not sure yet.
Any information to indicate that? Just seems like maybe could be a prospect that could do that. Later in the afternoon, we had teased this on the show. Alabama had a chance to land 4-star running back Jonas Walton. Unfortunately, he did commit to Notre Dame, so you miss out on that. I think you're still in great standing with 5-star Xavier Crowell, so I think that's maybe where their attention has mostly turned for this class. You know, I don't know that they're hurting too bad missing out on that one. And then finally, late afternoon, probably the biggest story of the day, 5-star linebacker Xavier Griffin decommits from USC. It's been one of the Tide's top targets on the defensive side of the ball for a while now. He has been committed to USC for almost a year, but did finally announce his decommitment last night. He's expected to be here for a visit in June, I believe. So we will we'll see what happens there.
There we go. So follow Mason Woods, MAWoods_, on all the social media machines on Twitter for your recruiting updates as Xavier, you said Xavier Griffin?
Xavier Griffin.
All right, so this is our guy right here. We got to type Xavier Griffin into Huddle and see what we can see. Xavier Griffin, Huddle. Let's see. Is this a bad man?
He's a bad man. I mean, he literally can do it. Can drop back into coverage, can rush the passer, can be a run stopper as a linebacker. Like, very, very good player.
6'4", 2". Here in my ear. Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. 6'4", 212". Out of Gainesville. You already said that, didn't you?
I don't know if I actually did say that. I might have missed that.
That's okay. I thought he was a West Coast prospect because I wasn't listening very closely. He's not a West Coast guy.
No, no, no.
Come on. Kalen DeBoer, recruit in the Southeast. He's got a Gainesville, Georgia. That's like right outside of Athens. So maybe Georgia barreling down on him, barreling down on him. If he's right outside of Athens and Georgia's not after him, is that a bad sign? I bet Georgia is after him.
I think he is supposed to take a visit to Georgia as well this summer. I think it's Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, and Alabama are the 4 schools he's visiting this summer.
There you go. That makes sense because he cannot be. I think Gainesville's like 20 minutes away from Athens.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, Georgia, Alabama. Yeah, so Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and Tennessee are the 4 he's going to be visiting this summer.
That's a pretty good company to keep.
Yeah.
He's mean off the edge. I'll tell you that.
Good player.
This is a fella that I don't want to be lined up against as a tackle because he's embarrassing him. Getting around, that was a nice little speed move. All right, so Xavier Griffin, come make a good decision. Whatever decision you make, make a good decision. Mason, what do we want to do today? We want to first connect the audio correctly. I didn't do that right off the bat. So once you started giving the recruiting update, they heard you. Good deal. Okay. That's the first thing we want to do. Actually, yesterday's so fun. Yesterday's fun because of the excitement. Look, I know this isn't an NFL show, but we can tie it into the Alabama stuff a good bit. Alabama, look. You're getting ready for the NFL schedule. The next year's NFL schedule comes out last night, and you see all these teams putting out their social media stuff, getting excited. Our man Hunter DeCyber's already written you up when Alabama's 2025 draft class will go head-to-head next season. You can read that on Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. He's got the draft class right there, Tyler Booker all the way to C.J. Dupree, and then week one all the way to week 17. There, each time those guys might face off against one another. So if you've got some favorite rookies that you're wanting to see play against each other, like Tyler Booker, Jihad Campbell opening up the NFL season on Thursday Night Football. Whoo! Yeah, first game of the year. Good luck, guys. You can check that out on Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. Hunter's got you a very, very clear guide for you. With that being said, and being the setup, Mason Woods, Josh Jacobs, and Xavier McKinney. Oh, my gosh. I'm about to have to wash my mouth out with soap. The Green Bay Packers won the schedule release to me.
Yeah, definitely one of my probably top three of all of them that I saw. I said this to you before we started recording. Like, anytime they get the players to actually attempt to do any bit of acting, it makes it so much better because it just feels like they're actually into it a little bit. It's not just guys monotone reading off a script who don't want to be there. And the Packers did exactly that, unfortunately.
Fortunately for us. Yeah, fortunately for us, because Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney were the star. Yes. I don't know if I said that right off the rip, but Josh Jacobs, former Alabama running back, and Xavier McKinney, former Alabama safety, were the superstars of this three-minute clip. And if you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. I tweeted it yesterday. Yes, I tweeted Green Bay Packers propaganda. Huh. But Josh Jacobs is, oh, I'm sleepy, and he lays down on the couch, and it becomes Josh Jacobs' dream, and Xavier McKinney becomes the dream genie, and it just loses my brain. And the dream genie is bringing in all these themes of when they're playing who. And, like, that was one thing that I didn't love about the schedule releases this year. There was never the explicit week one, you're playing the Jets. Week two, you're playing the Raiders.
Yes. And I saw someone say that, and I guess it probably was this, is that now with all of the networks and everything, everyone wants their own moment to be like, these are our games and this is when they're happening. So that like jumbled everything up. But yes, now I'm with you. Just give me the schedule. Tell me, you can do all of your build up, whatever. You can go to the draft and announce the release for the release of the release of the schedule. But just give me the schedule all at once. You know, I hate this, like, trickling it out to us as the week has gone on, starting with, I guess, the international games first, and then you're getting, I did not like it.
I have one of my Bears podcast buddy who is all over it, and he's texting, they're just releasing this one. I'm like, Luke, I love you. That may be on the schedule. It may not be. This is like Sunday night, yeah. Saturday night, and he's got good sources, sure, and he's got good people that he follows, sure. But I was just ready to give it to me Wednesday night, 1 through 17, and it was a win, and just get ready for next season. So it was fun getting the schedule release. The Bears, I'm going to give them a B- for their video. Got a little comedian, and it was like, I don't know. The I wanted them to be schedule related as far as who you're playing when, because that used to be kind of that. Like the Titans, even their little skit was schedule related. I did like the Titans skit.
Schedule Rizzy. Need to get me a prescription.
What are some of the side effects of schedule Rizzy?
I know one of them
was, lack of wife time.
One of them was imposter syndrome, and that's when the Texans came up on the schedule. You know, on the one was a diarrhea for the Browns, obviously. Those are the only two that I really that I can remember off the top of my head. But it was a good, you know, that was when they got into the 1 through 17 was all of the side effects had a side effect for each team, basically.
I like that. Okay, good theme. Very good. So much better than the Bears, for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to like the Bears one because guy that they got, Lamorne Morris, he's in a TV show that I really like. And I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's funny. But yeah, it was kind of lame.
Yeah, I'll
classic. Oh, I sent the email to the wrong people. Oh, like it was like I've seen this a million times before.
And it had nothing to do with who we were playing, when we were playing them. And at the end of the video, he's like, here you go, coach. Here's the schedule. And then they popped up the schedule. I'm like,
Yeah.
That's lame. All right.
Yep. The Chargers, I think, were mine number one again. They just kill it every year. They've got people very, very good at doing what they do on their social media team. I don't know if you watched it, the Minecraft schedule release. And you probably have to have like played the game a bit to understand it and really appreciate it. And I have played the game a fair amount in my life. It was just great. All of the little Easter eggs throughout it, you know, each team you start off with the Chiefs doing the dark magic, like summoning something. And then you get, you know, I think it was like AFC West Estates, and three of the four teams have these big mansions, and the Raiders were in like a little dirt hut to the side. Like, it was great. They had Jordan Schultz and doing their fighting at the Starbucks at the combine in the background of one of them. It was great. Like, it was very, very good.
Yeah, I'm watching this now. I'm liking how this is starting.
Yes, it is good. Last year they did a great one. They did the
Pop-Tarts, right?
They did the Sims last year. The Pop-Tarts was, I think, like the first one that like got them on, and then they did like basically everything in the Sims world, and it was hilarious last year. I had to go back and watch it again this morning. The Chargers like kill it every year. They're doing really, I don't know how they stay so on top of it, but they're very, very good.
Well, you know, at least if their football team's not going to win at a high level, the social media team can. Would you rather your football team win and just have the lamest social media ever? Yes.
Yeah, probably.
I'd rather the Bears have just put out one graphic here's this kid, and just have the guys just locked in, ready to go. Oh, yeah, it
could be the Browns and be terrible and also have the worst schedule release. I don't know if you watched theirs.
No, what was it?
It was really, I don't even know how to describe it. It was like the elf mascot, like holding, and then a bunch of balloons floated up in front of him, and he like punched through them, and it was very strange. I truly don't even know how to describe it. It was all like CG. It was just weird. It was very strange and a bit off-putting, a little unsettling.
I see my Bears in this video with a little teddy bear. This is very weird.
Yeah, just extremely strange. I don't know what I don't even know what the pitch was to get this. So, you know, I don't know.
Week two, he's cooking a Raven's egg, but there's a Packers cheese next to him for week three. All right. I guess they're trying to tie some of these games together and make it.
Didn't like that one. Did not like it.
AI.
Colts fumbled the bag. You saw the Colts did the Minecraft thing too. Unfortunately, it was not like the Chargers. They did it in the game and like recorded it in the game. The Colts did this like crappy cartoon of it, which didn't make sense, and then also had to delete it immediately because I think the speculation is that they made an inappropriate Tyreek Hill joke about him being arrested this offseason.
I think I saw that,
and so they ended up pivoting to
they've got this nasty the little
NBA paint guy that does the goofy NBA paintings, yeah. Which those are funny, but you know, drop the ball on this one, Indianapolis, as you always do.
There you go, Colts. What is it? A Colt? No, they don't have any slogan, do they? Pony up? No.
No, the AFC finalists. They hung that banner for a while.
Oh man, a big day yesterday in golf, per se. Not really, but not in pro golf. Big day
on the celebrity golf circuit.
Yes. Katie Winham, when she joins us, is going to talk, going to be telling us about the Regent Pro-Am. She was out there yesterday for Alabama Crimson Tide on SI, spending 8-9 minutes with Kalen DeBoer, 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes with Nick Saban.
Busy about, man still.
And about 9 minutes with Nate Oates. Nate Oates literally walked up and gave them the entire rundown of the summer. Well, we're still trying to hire an assistant coach, and we got this many scholarship positions left, and we really like these guys, and we really are wondering about those guys. The first clip that I had of Oates was like 4 minutes, and like nobody had asked him a question.
Yeah, he was very transparent with just kind of what's going on. And I appreciate that. Obviously, he's not telling us the nitty gritty details of everything, who they're interviewing, and like what players are going after, but they laid it all out for us pretty well. I appreciated that. The thing, and this had nothing to do with what you just said, but what made me so upset about this golf tournament is Charles Barkley. I'm upset that he's upgraded his golf swing so much that it's no longer fun to watch him play golf. He just looks like a normal guy out there now. It's not any fun. He used to have the horrible like double clutch. And it was just the most entertaining thing because sometimes he'd hit it straight and it was really cool. But no, he's gotten too good at golf and it's not entertaining anymore.
What do you think about him saying, I ain't giving Auburn $1 million? I've given Auburn more money, legal and illegal. I'm not giving them millions of dollars anymore.
I didn't see that. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I don't want to butcher this quote.
Very awkward interaction with Kalen DeBoer.
You got a good bro.
It was so robotic. It was just like, hello, Kalen. I am Chuck. Welcome to the state. I am Chuck. It was so strange. He like had this weird smile. And then at the end, it's like he snapped out of it and was like, you know, don't let him hear me say this, but you got a good program. It was very weird. But yeah, that good on you, Charles Barkley. They don't deserve your money. They wouldn't do anything with it anyway.
Yeah, he says, I've given more money to Auburn, legal or illegal, than any athlete in the history of the school. There's not a single person in the world who's given more money to Auburn, legal or illegal, than me. But the notion that I'm going to come up with a couple million dollars every year so that we can be good at basketball and football, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
I respect it because it is the stupidest thing. It's just preposterous for these schools to expect at least they're going after a very wealthy alumni here and not just the average fan like some places are. But still, it's ridiculous for them to expect those people to pay for the program.
He continues, I've been rich for a long time. I plan to stay that way. But the notion that I'm going to give Auburn millions of dollars every year so that we can be good at sports, that's just not going to happen. I'm really proud of what I've given Auburn, and I'm going to continue to give them money, but I'm not going to give them millions of dollars every year so we can be good at sports. That's just stupid.
Good. Respect.
More
people need that attitude. Do you think that is Charles Barkley is extremely wealthy. Do you think that is an issue of though he might just not be able to scrape together a few million dollars to throw at Auburn? You know, he doesn't have the oil tycoon money like some of these guys at Texas have to just,
no,
here's $4 million. Not going to bother my bottom line.
No, I think it has everything to do with the fact that Charles Barkley does not need to give a single dime to Auburn to get the status that he gets right now.
That's fair.
He walks onto campus.
Everybody knows who he is.
King Barkley, right?
Round of rebound,
exactly.
Baby.
Exactly. And you're right back in your hometown, and it's, status. Yeah. Wherever you want to go, behind the rope, sir. Yeah. You want to sit right here, sir. Do you you need to ride over there, sir, kind of thing. And he's earned that, absolutely. What you've got right here with these boosters and with these, you know,
they're trying to buy their way in.
Exactly.
Yep.
I'm trying to rub elbows with Bray Hubbard and Ty Simpson because that makes me cool, and I can go back to my business buddies, my hunting buddies, family. I can brag to my cousin Jimmy. Well, it doesn't matter, but yep. I think it's all about.
I think that's a great point.
You know, getting something that the otherwise these money people would not have access to.
Yeah,
because
clout chasers.
Percent, yeah, a little bit. I mean, yeah, you were not 6'9", great rebounder in the 80s who, you know, so you got to give us a lot of money. Charles can get away with not giving money and still keeping his high status in the Auburn family. I wonder if he were just, a random 6'9", 6'8", Auburn fan, name your profession, doesn't matter. I don't want to put a profession out there if he would be feeling the same way because he wouldn't get the same access.
It's fair. Jani Broome going to have that same love in Auburn?
Oh, my gosh. Jani Broome got me into another...
Jani Broome with the...
got me into another argument into a chat that I didn't want to be in an argument.
Shockingly short vertical.
I ended up on the wrong side of the argument. I ended up on the side of the argument that I did not want to be on. That Jani Broome is good, guys. Come on, fellas. Come on. Because you know how internet fans are. You get one clip of Jani Broome jumping,
24 and a half.
24 inches.
A half inch shorter than the 6'6", 464-pound defensive lineman that attempted the same thing at the NFL Combine.
Yeah, so bad vertical for Jani.
Really bad. Not like bad is an understatement. That's really, really bad. You're going into the NBA.
But when are you ever standing, just standing? You're moving in the NBA.
I mean, Jani does a lot of just standing. That's his whole game is standing under the basket.
At the tip.
He does. His whole game is just standing. He was not an athletic freak this year. He was bigger than everyone, and he's really strong.
That's what I tried. They're like, you said he was one of the best. You said he's the best player in college basketball. And I was like, I said that in January. Yeah. I reserve my right to like develop that opinion, first off. And second off, he is probably top three, top four, top two, sure. Top four best player in basketball. You want to say he's a bum?
The jump from college basketball to the NBA is remarkably significant.
Yeah, here. I got Zach Edey was a bum too. And I was like, okay, you're not the difference between college basketball and the NBA. Like, if you're a good player, you're gone by your second year. Mm-hmm. Old man Jani Broom and old man Zach Edey just dominated.
I got to give it to Zach Edey, though. He is doing a lot better in the NBA than I expected. And I think it solely is just because he's so big. Jani Broom does not have the same luxury of being 7'3" or whatever it is. No. You know, I just don't, you know, maybe he'll prove me wrong. I hope he does prove me wrong. But that's a damning bit of evidence against him there.
No, I said I told my friends, I said he's not going to be a good pro.
No.
But he was a great college player.
Did you see the Duolingo official app tweeting out, you know, get ready to learn Chinese, buddy?
you can still make some money playing it.
Shoot, go play for the Guangdong Tigers? Little Shanghai Sharks?
You ready?
Those why he's right. Ask Jimmy Fredette how he's doing.
Probably he's doing pretty well.
Dang well.
You could be a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah, man. They would love him. He would be the best player over there as soon as he stepped on the court. Some of those guys are pretty good, honestly, in China, I think, now. But still, I guarantee he'd be one of the best guys in that entire league the moment he stepped over there.
Jani Broom, good luck. I guess we officially did get the news for LeBaron says no option, not going back to Bama. I mean,
I appreciate you not making us wait another month.
Yes. Thank you, LeBaron. Well done. Yeah. He says pretty much all in. Yep. Not going back. I already told Nate Oates, and basically this lines up with everything that we've seen over the last six weeks, something in that range. I don't really have anything else on it the door's finally shut.
Yeah. Finally, you get an actual ending on this. You know, you get a bit of resolution here that we all thought it was coming, like you just said. But it's awesome. Very glad that he gives us this resolution a month before he actually had to. I think that's, you know, him doing right by the program. The program did right by him by getting him helping him get into this position. So, you know, giving him a little bit of grace back, I think it's good.
And Nate Oates yesterday at the Regents Tradition, goodness gracious, just saying a lot of things. He got he got into a ton. Talked about the schedule. Which angle you want to go in? Talked about this doing the schedule. He talked about who's playing point guard. Talked about the empty scholarship spots. He talked about a ton. What talked about Houston and Latrell's, you know, recovery. Mm-hmm. What you feeling like getting into it, Nate?
Let's start with this point guard conversation. I think that was maybe the most intriguing part to me. What was it he said?
Aiden Holloway and nobody else? No, just kidding. You know what his quote is. You know what we'd like to get? You know, obviously, we think Latrell and Houston can play a little point guard. That's definitely a little bit of an issue. Holloway's definitely there. Here we go. Is this further? Yeah, he goes. Wright and Millett, who are both six. No, that's exposition. That's Hunter's exposition. Yeah, Wright's definitely there. He goes, if you go back to our second year, think about how we played with Herb Jones. You know, we started Herb and kind of really had two guards around him. You had Josh Primo, Jaden Shackelford, and John Petty, and then Keon Ellis started a little bit too. All three of those guys, none of them were really point guards. So we can play where you get a big creating wing, which if you look at some of what we've done and maybe what we're going to bring in and what we're looking at, Keontae Jones, what we're looking at. But yeah, we don't necessarily have to play with just a point guard with the way we play and kind of how we have with multiple handlers playing as fast as we do. So I think you can play with like three or four handling the ball with like a three or a four handling the ball, a lot being a creative for us with how well some of these guys shoot off the ball too. This sounds like
we got five shooters. Don't matter who's bringing the ball up.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, that's kind of the way I see it.
Great. Thank you for the optimism because that continue.
I mean, I just, you know, that if you got five shooters on the floor, it doesn't matter. Somebody's going to get a ball. Somebody's going to get a play. Somebody's going to make something happen. I don't think it's, you know, if you got five guys that can all kind of create their own shots, that can all reliably shoot from anywhere on the floor, I don't think it matters as much that you need a guy like a Mark Sears who's making things move and facilitating and getting guys into spots where they're getting good shots. Now, it's a little bit of projection, obviously, but I feel pretty good about a lot of these guys that Alabama has not only gotten through the transfer portal, but the guys that are already on the roster and then the guys they're bringing in by way of the recruiting trail. Like, I think a lot of these guys can create their own shots, can create opportunities for themselves. And I don't know that you necessarily need as much a facilitator out there so much as just someone that's going to get the ball from point A to point B across the half court line.
Yeah, I mean, the system is that's kind of what I'm seeing here, or what I'm hearing in this quote, is that the system is maybe not foolproof. That's not the right answer. That's not the right word.
Not necessarily dependent.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a better answer. That's a better word. Aiden Holloway.
I think Aiden Holloway has improved enough as a player to take on that role. I think he's a much different player than he was in that 1 year at Auburn, where he was forced into that role and, you know, very clearly uncomfortable in it. I don't know if he can be your full-time guy there, but I think we definitely saw it in flashes last season.
I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about who's got the ball late in crunch time. I'm concerned about Latrell and Houston's recovery. If they both recover great, then awesome. Roll Tide. Sweet. But Achilles is an Achilles, and, you know, bad knees are bad knees. Yep. And golly, I hope they're both absolutely improve and recover. But, oh, I think you got to leave a little bit of space that they may not be the same players.
Things that can always linger.
I think Coach Oates is really putting a lot on Jahlil Bethea.
Probably.
Did you hear him yesterday? He was a top five pick. He was projected top five pick before he went to Miami. And then, you know, he kind of didn't have a season that he wanted to. I think he thinks, we just stole somebody.
Maybe he's right. I trust his basketball opinion a lot more than
my own. Yeah. Yes.
So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt in that. I do think you're right, though. I think that they, it kind of feels like maybe, watch out. We might got one here.
Yeah, I think that might be, I don't know if this is Coach Oates's, I don't know if it's overconfidence in, yeah, we can coach him up, or, yeah, he wasn't coached well last year, or just the feel that I get is secret weapon kind of, not so much secret, sure. But hey, we're about to make this guy into something.
I mean, it didn't seem like a lot of things went well for Miami last year basketball wise, so I could see how possibly it was a case of not being coached too well.
Coach Lee, coach retires, and they're like up on NIL payments and whatever. I'm just a huge mess.
Yeah.
Huge mess with the basketball program at Miami. We will look for updates for the Alabama's basketball program. I'm looking for Keyonte Jones to make an announcement fairly soon.
You would think so.
I think that's going to I think that's going to happen for Alabama. I think that he's going to come in there, and you heard right there, point forward. I think that could be a role that he might be able to do for Alabama.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of different guys handling the ball for Alabama. I don't know that it's going to be necessarily just one, you know, hey, you're not going to have a Mark Sears this year.
All right, Mason Woods, I'm going to play our Warren Tire ad, and then let's shift gears to Ross Dellinger's proposed spring calendar.
So my name is Russ Warren, and I'm one of the owners here at Warren Tire. We started in 1961. My granddad on University Boulevard, so we've been kind of a staple here in the Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama community since then. And so thankful to be in the third generation. And we have two locations now in Tuscaloosa. We're right here at the 15th Street location right now, where we just do tires, brakes, and alignments mostly here. Our university location does oil changes, engine work, air conditioning work, front end work, the whole nine yards. And so any of our two locations, you can come check us out.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right, we're live inside the Derry Daniels State Farm Studios just off McFarland Boulevard. This is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. You're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify. Go follow my friend Mason Woods at MA Woods_. Ross Dellinger is all over college football changes, and there's a lot of them all over the place right now. He's over this House versus NCAA case, and he's over the proposed changes to college football playoff that we talked about the other day, and now a new proposal for spring calendar. A new proposal for spring calendar that includes, and come on, please, 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 the proposal will add 6 contactless OTA-style practices and reduce the transfer portal to 1 single window for either January, March, or April. I don't have to go much further. Mm-hmm. There's not any more details, but like these two things would be extreme improvements for college football.
I think so, 1,000%. It's just we have talked at length about how much we despise the 2 transfer portal windows, and it's just a completely flawed system from the ground up. This would be fantastic. And then also the 6 OTA style practices, and then kind of spreading things out over the what is it? You spread the 21 practices over the 2 5-week periods. I think you kind of hinted at this a little bit, but like being able to just have those contactless practices.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. To install things, you know, to run through new schemes and everything really quick and just kind of get them fresh in everybody's mind and then have to be able to take that to the field later, I think is awesome.
Yeah, so let's just think about it from an Alabama perspective. You're Kane Womack, you're Kalen DeBoer last year. If you had 6 contactless practices to implement your stuff, so what this is doing is right now you've got the 15 practices and there are contact rules, but you can pretty much end up going full pads. I think it's a 2-day acclimation period. And then you can pretty much go full pads. But what ends up happening is it's worthless to go full pads because let's get quarterback Mason Woods in full pads to run 95 power and turn around and get his ear hole blown off and not know anything about the play. Yeah. Not like he's going to have to walk through. I mean, I'm making up I'm making up lingo, but he's going to have to walk through. What was it in high school? It was East 75 power, you know, XD, you know, you just go on and on. But basically, if you're a quarterback, if you're a wide receiver, whatever position, it doesn't matter. You got to walk through the lingo and say, every time you hear this, these are my and then you're wasting practice time. Mm-hmm. And so these 15 practices become some of them are walkthroughs today and some of them are installed today. Some of them are, hey, guys, get ready. We're hitting today. You're going to have to hit. Not have to hit. You're going to get to hit. but I think these OTA-style practices, these contactless practices will go a long way for new coaching staffs and will go a long, long, long way for freshmen, early enrollees. That's been the trend over 2-4 years now. I mean, you've had early enrollees for longer than 4 years, but over the last 4 years,
it's really picked up.
Yeah, it's been, if you're not enrolling early, you're likely behind. Mm-hmm. Ryan Williams didn't enroll early because he reclassified, was not behind, but like.
See Chuck McDonald yesterday tweeting out his picture.
He
just looks like a monster.
You're ready to go.
Like a beast.
Richard Young did not enroll early. You had Jam and Justice enrolled early, and Richard's been fighting that battle since. And so the move has been over the last 4 years to enroll early if you can do it. And I think this would be a great. I mean, what's Keelan Russell doing with 6 OTA style practices where he can walk through the progression real slow, and then you still have 15 practices to go. Get your head blown off and with some contact.
I think any bit of, and you know, look, I didn't really see any of this myself, but any bit of hesitation or like gun shyness that you may have seen today, that would not be there.
Yeah, I think this is a great proposal. Now, I'm sure the players like, oh no, more.
What's a couple walkthroughs? Get over
exactly.
It. This is one time where I'll be in the camp of like, suck it up, buddy.
I mean, they used to go 4 times a day.
Yeah, come on. Like back in my day.
Oh man, Mason, I'm in the last generation of 2-days. Of real 2-days.
Yeah, I had 1 year of 2-days in high school before they quit doing them.
It was amazing. It was hell, but it was amazing at the same time. It was like you just gotta get yourself geared up for it. Go to bed as soon as you can after practice. Turn the TV off, roommate, in the dorm room. Oh, man. So I think that this is a great change. But more specifically, if you had to take one or the other, give me the single transfer portal window.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's just such – we have talked about it so much on this show, how that is such a massive issue with college football right now and how it is like the crux of so many problems. Just take it away. And yeah, I'll be happy. You can keep your 15 practices if it means we lose the one transfer portal window. If that's the compromise you have to make here, I'm fine with that.
I hope that they move the just adjust the winter window out of bowl season, out of national championship season. Put it, hey, national championship is over. Ohio State is king. Everybody's happy in Columbus. Next day, portal is open. Mm-hmm. Portal is open for 2 weeks. And even that's too long, but make your decision. You're in, you're out in 2 weeks.
If you think that these colleges do not have a team of advisors that can get them caught up off of a week of missed school, a week where nothing even happens because anyone that's been to college knows the first week is virtually useless in a lot of things. It's just like, they'll be okay. They'll be all right. I hate that argument.
Well, the academic calendar,
nobody cares.
Yeah, you can work around that. Professors will get you in. Oh, you missed three homeworks and a quiz. So let's start scheduling these over the next week and we'll get you caught up in 2 weeks. Yep. You'll be set.
No big deal.
All right, Mason.
That's the price you have to pay if you transfer. Yes. I don't think that's that bad.
For whatever you're going to make in NIL. Oh, my gosh. I've been drawing all over my pants, Mason, with my pen.
Oh, no.
Darn. Oh, well. My ADD. I'm just with my pen. Mason, we're going to have Katie Windham join us in just a minute. But before we do, I want to revisit a conversation we had yesterday with Florida, with Billy Napier and the hierarchy of Nick Saban assistants. Obviously, Kirby Smart won. You got double national title, won. I won't hear an argument for another.
Yeah.
But you got Sarkisian, you got Kiffin, you got Billy Napier. I would like you to place those three in order in hierarchy of best to worst or most prestigious who do you think Daddy Saban's most proud of, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. We're going to get Katie Windham to chime in on this as well.
I'd go Kiffin, Sark, Napier.
Oh, okay. Elaborate.
I just, Kiffin always felt like this special little, just Saban's little special guy. It's just like his funny little pet project.
You've overcome so much.
You've done so well, little man. I'm so happy for you.
How many butt chewings it took?
Yes, I'm sure that Saban hates the amount of goofy, like in the media things that Kiffin has done and the kind of, you know, we've talked about the podcast things and all that, whatever it is, all the tweeting. I'm sure he hates all of that. But I think he just always, and I don't know him, but it always felt like he just had a special little place in his heart for him. And I, you know, if you're asking me who he'd be most proud of, I think it's because Kiffin's, hey, look, he has taken Ole Miss as far as he's ridden that horse as far as he can ride it. I think I don't know that you can squeeze much more juice out of Ole Miss than he.
Well, they could have beat Florida and got to a playoff.
For sure,
you could win the games you're supposed to win. You could not lose at home to Kentucky, Lane. That's a sin. You lost at home to Kentucky. You need to go to church for that.
Yeah. But that I think that'd be our ranking.
Man,
I think if Sarkisian, you know, if he can keep Texas where they're at and keep going and maybe get him a title, obviously he's going to take over that two spot, but I wouldn't put him there yet.
I almost wonder if he goes Sark, Napier, then Kiffin.
Really?
Just because I think he views Lane Kiffin, like I agree with you largely, but this is just semantics. Mm-hmm. I think he views Kiffin as your dad. You grew up in coaching. You had all these opportunities. You know, obviously, I think he's proud of him for sure. I think there's a little grain of like giving you a little bit of crap here. But with Sarkisian, it's the overcoming the issues, alcoholism, and okay, it's the. That's, I mean, he got thrown in a really terrible spot here, national championship game to cover Lane's rear end here in Tuscaloosa. Yeah. And that didn't go well. Then he comes back and, well, who gets named head coach when Nick Saban has COVID? It's Steve Sarkisian. And I think you might think Sark is number one.
Maybe.
Oh, well, Kirby, but Sark, yes. Right after that. Yeah. Kirby aside was the premise.
Yes. And it's a pretty wide gap between him and everybody else right now.
Billy Napier takes a leap up that trade
this year.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Gets Florida to a playoff. Maybe wins a playoff game.
Let's find out. All right, we're going to have Katie Windham join us right here. Lead writer for Bama Central, BamaCentral.com, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. Follow Katie Windham at Katie Windham _ on the Twitter machine. And there's my clicker right there. Bam. Good morning, Katie. How we doing?
Good morning. I'm good. Yeah, that's really the best way to describe. Every time I pick up a credential now, I never quite know what to say. Like yesterday at the Regents thing, they asked. They didn't, you know, a lot of it, at stadiums, they'll look at your ID to verify. Yesterday, they just wanted to know your name and organization. I was like, whatever I say, it's the wrong one these days. But it's all the same thing to you.
I just try to jumble it all together. Bama Central, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. Just make it all sound one huge title. The bigger the title, the better.
Yeah, something like that.
Katie, I want to start right there with the region tradition. We are going to have you on to talk softball and the NCAA regionals. But you were front and center with Nate Oates, with Nick Saban, and with Kaylin DeBoer yesterday. Your first time at the Regents Tradition, just how was it? What was the experience like for you? And then we'll get into some topics that we may have heard about.
Yeah, well, it's early. Had to leave Tuscaloosa in the 5 o'clock hour.
Which, yes, it is early.
I don't normally ever see that hour of the day. But, yeah, it was I guess there's just not a lot of parking in Greystone, or maybe they don't want people driving through the neighborhood, probably more likely, and dealing with that security. So, you know, you park and shuttle, and supposedly that line to the shuttle was longer than it's ever been. So we were a little worried we were going to make it. We weren't going to make it in time for Nate, but I was like, look, there's one thing we know about Nate Oates. It's that he's not starting a press conference on time. Sure enough, he's about 15 minutes late, so it all worked out. But we got there. He was supposed to go at 7:15. We were walking down the hill at about 7:14, so we would have made it either way. But, yeah, he wasn't ready to go on time. But it's definitely a cool event. It's pretty cool that, you know, in our backyard, essentially, you have all these college football legends paired with some famous golfers, lots of fans out there. We didn't stay super long after the interviews, worked a little bit, then went, found somewhere to work in Birmingham. But it's a cool event for sure. And it's like, I feel like it was kind of like unusual media access. Like nobody was really like checking anything. Like I felt like I could just, like there's people just that would walk, you know, within feet of the coaches that were, you know, on the driving range warming up. And it's just there's not as many. A lot of times I feel like we have more barriers, restrictions on where we can go. And it was from that standpoint, from media, it was great. I kind of wish I would have had more time to just chill and walk around and explore compared to having to go right, because actually thankfully we got a decent amount of content out of what they said yesterday.
Yeah, I think there was a ton to get into. Grade the golf swings real quick. Nick Saban's still the best. And, you know, we know Nate Oates and Kaylin DeBoer, their stance on golf has not been, we're golfers, but have they looked, did they look any better to you?
I never got to see Nate swing one ball. The first ball I saw Kaylin hit off the driving range, he piped it, like just crushed it down the middle. Then the one I videoed had a little bit of a hook. So I was like, oh, all right. And then Saban, the video, Saban is like such a engagement farming like gym. Like I just tweeted that little video out of him, like, which he wasn't like driving, he was kind of like chipping, I guess, and it, you know, it's gotten hundreds of likes, and you know, people just love Nick Saban, understandably. So I'd have to give Kaylin actually the best swing that I saw yesterday. But
we love that both of the coach and both of the current coaches saying we're trying to get under 100, we're not real golfers.
I respect it. I respect the honesty. Go ahead. That Saban swing was looking, you know, a little bit rough. I guess we can just get right into any of the comments.
Whatever you like. Yep.
Yeah. I want to start with Nate Oates. It felt like Nate Oates really gave us the most of anybody. He started right off with, you know, gave us the full summer rundown. This is where you're getting ready to interview a coach. We, you know, we have this many players on the roster. We're looking to add some. I guess really, what was your first main takeaway from kind of his opening statements there, kind of what he all gave us?
Yeah, that was another classic Nate Oates, a 4-minute opening statement, just laid it all out there for us, maybe trying to avoid some certain questions. But, I think ideally, he said this, ideally they would find a 12th person for the roster, but he thinks they're fine if they have to stay at 11. I think, he was asked about the point guards. I think at that point it was kind of a little maybe uncertain if LeBaron was coming back or not. Because originally, I think everyone kind of the perception was LeBaron's gone. He's not coming back. And then I think when the draft feedback started to be not as great, there started to be a little bit more buzz about, oh, if he's not a first round pick, if he's not a lottery pick, he's going to come back to Alabama. But apparently, no, he is not. I think he's just one of those kids, maybe doesn't like school or for whatever reason. He's ready to go pro, which good for him. Hopefully he does get drafted, finds an NBA team that's willing to, you know, draft him in the first round or early second, whatever. And so I think the point guard position is kind of interesting. But the thing is, at this point in the portal, I wanted to, because Nate's opening was so long, it's like I didn't get to ask the question I wanted necessarily. Because also in an event like that, you have the people that have the obligatory, what do you love about golf or this event? Mm-hmm. Which is fine. That's part of, like, that's the whole reason technically you're having a media availability. But I wanted to ask him because he talked about, you know, we have that 12th spot that we want to fill. And I kind of wanted to ask him, what's the timeline for that? Because he had mentioned it's a lot of it's going to depend on, you know, who comes back from the draft. So it's like, are those the main players you're left looking at? Because I would imagine there's not a ton of top end talent left in the portal. And are you looking for a guy that's going to be able to contribute, or are you just looking for the 12th guy to be on the bench? Because realistically, like, you know, more than likely, it's not going to be a 12-man rotation. And so it's like, how do you keep everyone happy? Some guys have to know what their role is. So that was kind of my biggest takeaway from Nate is that, you know, they do want to fill that 12th spot. But like, where is that source going to come from? And then, you know, Nate's just funny sometimes talking about that they want to have the toughest schedule again a couple weeks after he said they don't want to have as hard of a schedule. But it did work to their advantage in that this past year they lost, like, a relatively high number of games, and they still ended up being a 2 seed because of that strength of schedule, because of some of the good wins they had. So he knows what works. I don't know if this roster is ready for the top schedule in the country, but, you know, we'll see.
Mason, I told you last week that he couldn't help himself. I think I'm sorry, but I'm going to pat myself on the back. Yeah. right there at the traditions, he said, for this reason why it worked and that reason why it worked, and it was this. And I was like, yeah, you just couldn't help yourself. Oh, St. John's? Sure.
Yeah,
Arizona? Sure. Purdue? Sure. It doesn't matter. Illinois? Great. We'll schedule you up. He just can't help himself.
I'll take that over scheduling cupcakes.
Oh, please, yes. Thank the Lord. I want to see these marquee games, and I hope it, you know, works out for everybody. I want to ask and pivot right here to Jahlil Bethea, because he did mention him just a little bit, Katie, yesterday, and he was a guy that we wrote about when he committed, but I'm wondering if the hype that he had when he committed, which wasn't like extremely high, it was good, but not like, oh, extremely high. I'm wondering if we are underestimating what Jahlil Bethea could be. He sits there yesterday and says, oh, he was a projected top 5 pick and had not a good season at Miami. Their season went off the rails. What do you expect out of Jahlil Bethea? What's your kind of take on his addition to the team?
I mean, Nate clearly has pretty high expectations for him. I think he compared him to Aiden Holloway, right? Talking about a guy that maybe just didn't find the right fit. And I think Nate thinks obviously he is the right fit at Alabama for his system. And so he at some point obviously had a lot of people that saw his talent, saw what he can do, projected him high, was a McDonald's All-American, I believe. And you know, most people don't just become that by mistake. Most McDonald's All-Americans Alabama have worked out. Not all of them have stayed, but I don't think that's necessarily that they didn't work out. They just weren't always the best fit, like a Jaden Bradley or even Darian Reed. I mean, I think he was a good fit. I think maybe just he was – I think there's a lot of factors there. His injuries, I think maybe he's just looking for something else. But, yeah, I think Nate kind of sees this as not necessarily a project because if the talent's there, but – oh, can we turn the light switch on for this guy? Can we get him going the way we've been able to other people that join our system? And so I think he's a guy that Nate's excited about and is going to be a guy that's a good fit for his system.
I want to pivot to Kalen DeBoer's comments now. He gave us a little bit, you know, talked about the roster a bit, talked about the roster construction. I want to ask you about his comments on the tight ends. Joe wrote about it yesterday for the site. seems like he's optimistic about what these guys can bring to the table. I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, kind of have, as we've discussed, don't know that it's going to have the biggest impact in the stat book. But as far as just kind of what these guys can do for the offense, I guess just your reaction to his comments and also what you kind of your reaction to the two additions.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and listen to them again or read. I guess I should just go read Joe's story.
They're pretty generic. Pretty generic.
Just gave us the general, oh, these guys can be good. You know,
I honestly took it more as like he doesn't see them having a super huge role and like they're going to be depth. Or there's like he talked about one being younger and one being older. Mm-hmm. Like, and kind of these guys met a position of need. So Alabama's tight end room is just so weird because it's like you have Danny Lewis, a guy that's been here for a couple of years, but like wasn't able to beat out guys like Robbie Utes, which I mean, Robbie Utes just got drafted in the NFL, but like he's not your traditional tight end. And so it's like if Danny Lewis hasn't been able to crack, you know, the lineups, I don't know. So I think there's an opportunity for these guys to play. Obviously, they wouldn't have taken them if there wasn't. But I took it more sounding like they were kind of going to be depth pieces. And then, like, I don't know enough about them as far as, like, how they play to really, you know, I don't break down Troy or West Virginia film. So I don't know how much, really, I could say about, you know, my opinions on their additions.
Katie doesn't have the catapult for West Virginia, just running the tape back and forth for the in her with her clicker.
The YouTube highlights, yeah.
Katie, well, I'm going to ask you about two different topics that we hit this week on the football side of things. First, breakout candidates for Alabama football. Mason hit a bunch of them. I hit a bunch of them. We hit James Smith. We hit Xavier Mincy. We hit,
Olas.
Olas Olenin. Yes, that was a good one. So, look, you're welcome to repeat any of those names that we just, Daniel Hill was one of mine. But I'll just ask you, going into 2025, we know who some of the stars are. Who might be a breakout candidate in Katie Windham's book for the Crimson Tide?
I'm trying to think. I mean, this is like a cop-out answer, but I think whoever ends up winning the quarterback job has got to be a breakout star. Because, I mean, neither of the three of them have any real, you know, college experience. So this has got to be a breakout year for one of them, which, you know, it's looking more and more like it's going to be Ty Simpson, but we'll see. Because, you know, Kalen said yesterday that the competition always continues, but then I think he said, I think it was on, I saw Rodak or somebody tweet on the, one of the radio shows he was talking about. I think they just kind of pressed him a little more and they're like, well, when you got to name a guy eventually, most of the time, unless it's just a dead heat, or you have a kind of Tua Jalen situation in 2018. But I think he said about maybe halfway through fall camp, we'll know for sure. So, I mean, I think that guy, if you're Alabama, has got to have a breakout year. I like James Smith. That's a good pick. I think he's a guy that's really talented. He's gotten a lot of, hype. We saw some flashes kind of what he could be. I think LT Overton wouldn't really be a breakout, but I think he could, because he was played a big role last year, but more if he has like a breakout type year, he could catapult himself into a first round top 15, you know, NFL draft pick. I'm trying to think on the offensive side of the ball. I'm trying to think of like a wide receiver or something that could have a breakout year, but
got a couple good young guys coming in. Lotier Brooks, Derek Meadows,
yeah,
Jalen like Hale return,
yeah, Jalen Hale,
yeah. I don't know about him, but
yeah,
I think maybe one of the freshmen. I think one of those freshmen is going to have. It's hard to know in the spring, like because we've talked about this in the past. There's been A-Day MVPs that turn out to be complete busts. So
sometimes
the hype we're hearing about guys in the spring doesn't translate over, especially I think this spring when there were so many injuries and they were playing with such limited numbers. But yeah, I think one of those freshman wide receivers definitely has a good chance to kind of have a breakout season in their freshman campaign.
All right, and so on Wednesdays, we've been starting Know Your Enemy. We're trying to get to know some of these SEC teams. We did Texas last week. We did Florida this past week. And as we got into the Florida stuff, we realized, oh, the Nick Saban disciples, you were in the back end as we were kind of banting this around. Nick Saban, obviously Kirby Smart, number one, two national championships. But if there is an argument for number two, I think there's a pretty good argument with Sark, Lane Kiffin, and Billy Napier. Yesterday on the show, we were pretty high on Florida, despite their really challenging schedule. Katie Windham, how would you rank the hierarchy of Nick Saban assistants after Kirby Smart?
Like in their post-Saban careers?
Yes.
I feel like Billy Napier is a guy like he liked a lot, but I feel like he has not. He had what success at what Louisiana? That's where he was before Florida. Yes. But like, I feel like at Florida, it hasn't translated to huge wins or postseason success yet. And when you think about where Florida was as a program at the beginning of the Saban era, you know, it's like they've been pretty far removed from that. So I think I'd have just as far as like accomplishments, I think it would have to be Sark, and then Kiffin, and then Napier, but. None of them have won a national championship yet. So I think, you know, anyone that does that, it'll kind of catapult them. But I mean, Sark is back to back playoffs, right? Or did Texas make the playoffs?
Yeah, back to back playoffs. Yes, yeah, only yeah. team oh, to
yeah,
do that.
They had Clemson at home. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to remember with the 12 teams who all was in there. You know,
are you ready for 16? Are you kidding me?
It's just crazy. But yeah, I think it would have to be Sark. I mean, obviously, yeah, like you said, Kirby. It's kind of in his own echelon. This might be a good topic for y'all next week. This is kind of changing subjects. But it was a tweet, and apologies to whoever. I mean, it was some content account talking about the number one villain for every, like, SEC team. And Alabama, over the last 25 years, which I feel like is kind of, or I guess it's the year's 2025. So I feel like that's okay. I was going to say that's kind of arbitrary. But, and Alabama's was Philip Fulmer. And Tony was like, I feel like this is kind of an outdated take. Like, and I was like, well, I think because you didn't grow up watching Alabama football, you don't understand. Like, he tried to shut down the program. Like, Alabama fans hate Philip Fulmer, and like, he beat them. So it's like a double whammy. And I was like, who would be Alabama's villain? Like, true villain. I was like, you could say Cam Newton, but he was only there for 1 year. And then he was like, what about Kirby? I was like, I mean, Kirby's only beat them once. Like, you know, that's it's like, one. Which it wasn't a bit on a big stage, but, when I was talking about Kirby, I just thought about that. So that was kind of.
I think my answer would be Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, but then it's like I feel like he wasn't super like villainous. I don't know. Like
I don't know.
Wasn't he Cam's OC? He was Cam's OC, and then took them to the national title game.
But I mean, like his person, like he True. Didn't I feel yes. like do villainous things besides beat them. Which no, obviously no. Auburn beating Alabama is villainous.
Smacking on that damn bubble gum on the sideline.
Yeah,
that was evil.
But that's kind of the interesting thing about Kirby. It's just like as much success as he's had, Alabama's kind of been that bugaboo. And so we'll see if it is again this year, but that's looking a little far ahead. But
is it Tommy Tuberville? Six in a row and then becoming the senator?
It might be.
Six in a row. That wasn't fun.
That was awful to live through as a child.
Trying to make it about football. Six in a row. That's pretty hard. That's pretty hard times for Alabama.
I'll never forget Brandon. Hugh Freeze
to me, I mean, it was only back to back losses with Ole Miss. But Hugh Freeze kind of sticking it to kind of enjoy
the thorn in the side of Alabama.
Yeah. So that's a great question, Katie. I think Mason will write that down and we will take that into next week. But before we go next week, we're going to have a lot of time at the Rhodes House. Goodness gracious. Alabama softball 20 years in a row hosting a regional. Isn't that nuts? It's just, yeah. You'd want to talk about, programs falling, whatever. 20 years in a row hosting an NCAA regional speaks for itself. Alabama bringing in Virginia Tech, and we're going to be there this weekend to see if Alabama can make it out to the Norman Super Regional. Katie Windham, how are we feeling about the softball team going into a big weekend? Jackson State, Virginia Tech, it's going to be a great one this weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting draw for Alabama. I think a couple of people are projecting them a little higher. It's interesting that last year, not a ton of people were necessarily projecting them to host, and they ended up as a 14 seed. And this year, they have a better season. It's kind of like a weaker hosting bubble, and they're a lower seed than they were last year. But they're still hosting, so obviously they're going to be happy about that. Virginia Tech is going to be potentially some interesting matchups. They've already played twice this year. They've played a ton over the last couple of years, and every time it's been at Rhodes. And, like, every year in the postseason, Murph's like, I love – now I can't think of the coach's name. It may be Pete DeMore. I don't know. Whatever their Virginia Tech's coach's name is. And he's like, I always tell him, like, we're going to go play up in Blacksburg. And then Virginia Tech always just comes back down here, which I understand. You're probably not going to play softball in Blacksburg, Virginia in February because it's probably cold. But –
You were correct. Pete DeMore, you were correct.
Yeah, I got it. These two programs are very familiar with each other, but it's not – I think the last couple seasons, Alabama has kind of been the trendy, like, maybe not as much this year, but – and it's probably a little more warranted this year just because of how talented Virginia Tech is. A lot of people thought they would host. But Alabama has kind of been the trendy, like, they're the regional host that's going to get upset. And then the last two seasons, they've ended up not playing the number two seed in the regional that everybody thought was going to upset them because that team has lost. Last year it was Southeastern Louisiana. What?
Was it Stanford? Go ahead.
No, Stanford beat them in 2022. I remember it, 2023, it was Middle Tennessee State that they ended up playing for the regional championship. And then last year was Southeastern Louisiana. One of those years it was Clemson that was here. I think last year maybe. There's no guarantees that they play Virginia Tech because Belmont is a good team. Belmont's a good softball team. I think they have like one hitter who leads the nation in home runs or something like that. I could be completely wrong. But they're a decent team. It's going to cause Virginia Tech in that first game to probably have to pitch one of their better pitchers. Well, I think I heard this right. I can't remember if I heard it on Out of the Box, the podcast with Alabama softball's radio host, or if I heard it somewhere else, but I think Jackson State has like the worst RPI of any team in the tournament. Like they're an automatic qualifier from winning their conference tournament, I guess. And so the key for Alabama is going to be in that game one tomorrow, not having to pitch Caitlin Riley or Jocelyn Brisky. Your other three pitchers have got to be able to beat Jackson State. You hope the offense can like run rule them, quick game. You're well rested for whoever you're going to have to play on Saturday. And then you hope that Belmont and Virginia Tech are just in a pitcher's duel until the end. And, you know, it's a close game. There's some good teams in Tuscaloosa this weekend. Virginia Tech, when they met in the regular season, they played twice. It was a close game, game one. Emma Limley, Virginia Tech's ace, is one of the best pitchers in the country. She beat Alabama, scores 2-1. The offense could only score once. And then next time they played, Alabama run ruled them. So, I think that, you know, gives you a little bit of confidence. So I think Alabama should win this weekend. I think there's slight concerns about how the offense looked over the last four games coming into the postseason or into the NCAA tournament, because I would include the SEC tournament games. We'll have some fun at Rhodes this weekend.
Alabama starting on Friday at 5 o'clock. The first game going to be 2:30, Virginia Tech and Belmont. And so double elimination. You win on Friday. You win Saturday. You win Sunday. You're good. You start losing, things get complicated, and the schedule gets a little convoluted. I haven't looked yet, Katie, but is the weather going to be okay for us this weekend? Tuscaloosa weather. Because I know it was nasty last weekend. Yeah. Saturday rains. We got Saturday, Sunday rain. So we got to handle all the business and not have any extra games is the goal.
Yeah, all week it's been saying storms on Saturday and rain on Sunday. So hopefully it won't be all day rain like we've had some the last couple weeks, and they'll be able to get the games in. But yeah, this is when it's important when you're dealing with weather. You just got to take care of business, and the games are supposed to take care of business and not mess around and not force the if necessary games and back everything up. That's just classic. That's just typical this time of year. You're going to have some weather delays. You're going to have the game, the first game of the day, go 12 innings, and then the whole schedule's thrown off for the rest of the day. That's just postseason softball and baseball. So I'm sure you're familiar with in Hoover, you know, regionals.
We're going to spend a little bit of time with Patrick Murphy today in a press conference. What's going to be the angle? What are you going to be looking to ask Coach Murphy about his team's readiness this weekend?
Maybe about the offense those last four games, about the familiarity with Virginia Tech. I'm sure that's going to be asked. I think you're a little concerned about the pitchers as well. Jocelyn Brisky, I had somebody who was talking to me about this. Actually, somebody at church when I was home last weekend for Mother's Day about how Brisky looked after she got pulled against South Carolina in the SEC tournament. Didn't look like she was having the best time or the best attitude. After it seemed like maybe she turned a corner after the Oklahoma series, after she shuts down, has the complete game shutout against Missouri. And then things don't go as well for her in the South Carolina series or in the SEC tournament. So it's like, what kind of, you know, Jocelyn Brisky are you going to get? And that's really been the big question all season. And not that he can predict that. And, you know, he doesn't really like predictive questions or expectation questions.
He and Nick Saban?
Yeah. Actually,
how about that Nick Saban question at the end of his little region? What's your expectation for Alabama next year? He goes, I don't have any expectations.
Yeah, I feel like actually Saban would like Merv. If you asked him that, he would tell you like I don't like talking about expectations. But I feel like Saban will at least. I think I'm so conditioned to the expectations thing that I was waiting for Saban to bite the head off. But yesterday was just like a so typical like Josh Maxson, which like you know a very very small percentage of people even know who that is, but like or would have experienced this. But like it was such a typical of like we gotta hurry like. Saban had been talking for like a minute and a half, and he said two more questions, and it was like a 2.5 minute thing total. But
Coach is late, yeah. Guys.
Yep, that's why he's told the people he couldn't sign autographs. Coach is late; he's got to get to media. Then he had to go to the driving range and all that stuff. But yeah, back to softball. I think And just kind of the significance of them being able to host this many seasons in a row. It is an accomplishment. It is like a lower seed, obviously, than what fans are used to. But I think it's really – I had an interview with Ashley Johnson, the gymnastics coach, this week, and I'll probably have those stories coming out next week. But she talked about how it used to be essentially – there was 8 teams in college gymnastics that could win a national championship, realistically. And now there's probably 30. And it's kind of the same thing for softball. There probably used to be – 8 to 12 teams that could legitimately win a national championship each year. And now there's, yeah, probably at least 30. I mean, the SEC is like, everyone in the SEC is in the top 35. Like, the whole league is good. Like, the whole league is elevated where it used to be when Alabama was winning so much. There was maybe 4 or 5 other, you know, good teams in the league. So, yes,
Tennessee
like,
and Florida.
Yeah, like, seeding lower than what fans are used to. And did they have a disappointing end to the regular season? Yeah, but it's still impressive what they're able to do. And I do think this team is better than the past couple years' teams. And, you know, I'm not super high on where they're at coming into that NCAA tournament, but they can show us this weekend. They can completely change my mind with how they played this weekend, kind of like what they did last year in regionals.
Well, we've had a lot of fun with Katie Windham on the Joe Gaither Show. You follow Katie Windham at @KatieWindham_ on the Twitter machine. She's the lead writer for Bama Central, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. We're going to be over at the Rhodes House in just an hour, a couple hours or so, to watch some open practice, watch the ladies field some ground balls to try to get in the batter's box, get themselves warmed up for tomorrow. And then we will have a press conference for Patrick Murphy, all 4 representatives, all 4 teams. But we're mostly interested in the Patrick Murphy and the Alabama players portion. So we'll hear from them as well in the afternoon. Be looking for that on the Bama Central YouTube channel. Be looking for that on BamaCentral.com, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI, as we get ready for postseason action here in Tuscaloosa. Katie, thank you so, so much for joining us today. And every Thursday you're available. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See you at Rhodes a little bit later.
Absolutely. It's Katie Windham joining us. Follow her at @KatieWindham_ on the Twitter machine. She is going to be your go-to place for all softball action. She's your go-to place for all Alabama sports. But this weekend, Alabama softball, Katie Windham is the number one source. Mason Woods, I'm about out of bullets, man. How about yourself? You ready to close it down and have a good Friday?
Yeah, I don't think
tomorrow.
Yeah.
Friday show tomorrow. It's Thursday.
Yeah. Getting ready for Friday, getting ready for a good weekend.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun. We will look, if it's clear weather, I'll be fine. That's the only thing that I'm not really hopeful, not really want to experience is rain delays and roads, but that'll be all right.
There's been a preposterous amount of rain just over the last 3 weeks or so in Tuscaloosa here.
Like the weather machines.
Good Lord. It's insane. It feels like it rains every night about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. It's like, oh, and it's going to start pouring for 45 minutes, and then here we go.
Is that the Democrats or is that the Republicans? Who's got the weather machines now?
Know. Somebody needs to fix it, though. Too much rain in Tuscaloosa.
Somebody's bumped the rain function on. You need to just bump it back off and let us dry out a little bit. Let's have a good weekend of softball. We're going to have fun. You guys follow us at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_. Call us on the voicemail line, 205-462-7340, extension 800. Leave us a voicemail right there. Leave us a comment, and we will talk to you tomorrow on a Friday edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.